Thank you. Excuse me. My name is Rick Hind. I'm with Greenpeace. I'm going to do the first half of this, and Tom McQuiston from Steelworkers will follow. We have no financial involvement. The issue of chemical plant potential disasters became greatly aware to everyone in the United States in 1984 in the Bhopal disaster in December of 1984, I should say, at the Union Carbide plant there in India. That was the last time the industry could say this couldn't happen. And within months, a similar accident happened in Institute, West Virginia, only no one was killed, but they did have to evacuate the same company, Union Carbide, the same chemical leak, methyl isocyanide. And yet in India, where you had this massive loss, there was almost no lesson here in the United States, except for two laws, the Right to Know law and then the Clean Air Act risk management program. Both of those are often called Bhopal amendments to those statutes. When 9/11 happened, there was a renewed interest in the vulnerability of the chemical sector in the United States to terrorism. As you saw in the previous slide, 100 million Americans live in the vulnerability zone of about 300 of these facilities. 483 of them put 100,000 people at risk each. About 90 of them put over a million people at risk, and you'll see some specific examples of those. And there's one previous slide showed a facility in New York area that puts 12 million people at risk. The most common process involved in these off-site and on-site risks are hydrofluoric acid, chlorine gas, anhydrous ammonia, and sulfur dioxide. There are safer alternatives to virtually all of those processes. And the problem with them is that you're dealing with a toxic disaster that is a poison gas that kills very quickly. After 9/11, the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory testified that 100,000 people could be killed or injured in the first 30 minutes of a release of these kinds of gases. They estimated 100 people could die per second in the first 30 minutes. Homeland Security Council estimated that 17,500 people would be killed in the release of a chlorine tank car. Another 10,000 would be hospitalized, and 100,000 would be potentially injured. I've rarely seen in 30 years of work with EPA issues, toxic chemical issues, or others, government estimates that actually include terms like killed, and in this case, very specific. In 2009, the House of Representatives finally passed a bill that would require the facilities in the U.S. that could convert to safer alternatives to do that, but the legislation did not make it through the Senate. The current law that did in 2006 was a placeholder that was established just to let Congress have time to get back to a comprehensive bill. That law actually prohibits Homeland Security from requiring the use of a safer alternative, even if it's cheaper and cost effective. It also exempts thousands of facilities. It exempts all 2,400 water treatment facilities. It exempts port facilities, and that includes a majority of refineries in the U.S. In this past year, Senator Lautenberg in the Senate has introduced legislation that tracks the House passed bill from 2009. It's split into two pieces, a water treatment conversion facility bill and then a chemical facilities bill for jurisdictional reasons. There's over 100 organizations from EDF and Sierra Club to Greenpeace and major unions, AFL-CIO, Steelworkers, Teamsters, SCIU, AFSCME, are in support of communication workers, are in support of these, both the House passed bill and the legislation. Unfortunately, the Republican-controlled House would like to just extend the current loophole-ridden law for another 7 years. In the Senate, a Republican-led bill would extend it 3 years, and we know the compromise is a 5-year extension, essentially putting the issue out of reach for Congress for a number of years. Unfortunately, this ignores the fact that there are safer alternatives that are not being pushed or pulled or incentivized, and we have hundreds of facilities that have already converted, taking these risks and eliminating them for 38 million Americans. But in the same cities and risk zones, there are other facilities that still keep those same urban areas at risk. One company in particular, and we are not endorsing anybody here, but Clorox announced just before the House passed bill that they're converting all of their facilities. They're not changing their product or anything. They're simply changing the process so that there won't be transport or storage of chlorine gas in bulk quantities. They'll still make chlorine bleach, which we'd rather they not, but they are eliminating tremendous amounts of liability, billions of dollars worth of liability, to themselves and, of course, unbelievable risk to the communities around them. One last development that didn't make it into this slide is that just last week, the National Environmental Justice Advisory Council recommended to the EPA that the EPA, for the first time, use the Clean Air Act's General Duty Clause, which obligates every chemical plant to operate and be designed to prevent a catastrophic release. That's never been implemented, even though the Bush EPA actually proposed that in 2002, until BP and other lobbies in Washington weighed in and had the program scuttled. Even Christine Whitman complained about that in her book, looking back at her tenure at EPA. So we're hoping now that the Obama administration, which has been very consistent in support of requiring the use of safer alternatives in the homeland security legislation, will now apply that same policy to the general authority they have under the duty clause under the Clean Air Act. And I'll leave an article about that on the back table, but obviously the NEJAC is taken seriously by this administration, perhaps more so than ever with Lisa Jackson at the head of EPA. And I will now turn it over to Tom.
I'm going to continue on with this presentation talking about a specific chemical and process, hydrofluoric acid used at refineries. And in doing so, I would like for you to keep in mind what Celeste presented you about what happened at that mine, and also what Josh told you about the near impossibility of doing cleanup properly, or remediation, or response. Because those very same pressures that come through and ring through talking about that Big Branch disaster are in place in factories, refineries all over the United States. The same economic pressures driving things, the same lack of resources, people, those are in play at these refineries I'm going to talk about dealing with hydrofluoric acid. So that's critically important to recognize that, and Rick and I talked about it this morning, there are these risks, and sometimes it's good to substitute the word that Celeste used, gamble, for risk, because that's what's going on in terms of what workers and communities are facing. These pictures, these are three screenshots from a surveillance video at Corpus Christi Refinery near or at the hydrofluoric acid unit. And they show workers sensing something is wrong and then the explosion and fires that followed. That's what we're concerned about in terms of hydrofluoric acid. We have 50 refineries in the United States. In addition, there's a great risk for things getting off-site as well as on-site, and we'll talk about that. 50 refineries in the United States, and we, that the steelworkers represent a little over half of those, and they tend to be some of the larger ones, use hydrofluoric acid in very large quantities at those refineries that put both the workers and the communities at risk, unacceptable risk, given the potential consequences. This shows a test that was done in 1986. These are three screenshots as well. This showed up on ABC News a while back, and it shows a hydrofluoric acid cloud as it disperses in the desert. And as you could imagine, they said that the cloud was visible from 3/4 of a mile away and was 10 feet high. Imagine that enveloping a group of workers at a refinery and then moving out into a community. Hydrofluoric acid is nasty, nasty stuff. It has it vaporizes, it boils at 67 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay? So it's a gas that disperses rapidly. It severely burns in unique ways that are insidious. It goes after calcium and magnesium in the body, is highly toxic in inhalation, creates unbelievably nasty burns, chemical burns on people. There's an antidote. I listened to a webinar recently done by Honeywell, and they said this antidote, calcium gluconate, is now in short supply in the United States. I don't think anybody's conveying that message to the workers or the communities around these facilities. So, a shortage of the antidote. These are where some of the refineries exist that have more than 500,000 people at risk in the United States. There are other locations where there are severe risks, but there's not as many people in those areas. Okay? Each one of these, hundreds of workers. Average refinery has about 350 to 400 workers. They're all at risk. Millions, thousands and millions of community members are at risk. And those are the companies that operate those facilities. It's a huge problem nationwide. It can happen. You know, Deepwater Horizon disaster, essentially it was assumed that the risk was zero, and so we will plan as if it will never happen. Okay? There are hydrofluoric acid incidents occurring at refineries. They haven't been huge, huge disasters. They've been disasters for individual and groups of workers. There have been huge disasters that have happened at refineries that have not involved hydrofluoric acid. But the potential, both those speak to the potential for a major incident that does involve hydrofluoric acid affecting hundreds of workers and tens of thousands of community residents. There are much safer alternatives available. There was an article, 2006. They have converted a refinery to using what's called ionic liquid alkylation, a relatively benign, non-flammable, non-vaporizing chemical that could be used instead of hydrofluoric acid. There's also what's known as a solid acid catalyst that is granules that you can actually hold in your hand, non-toxic, that could be used. And our position with the steelworkers and others have taken the same position. We need to get these refining companies, terribly, terribly wealthy refining companies, to begin moving to the safer alternatives because the risks are too high. Recently, we conducted a study nationwide of 24 refineries where we represent workers that use hydrofluoric acid. We are in the process of analyzing that data and we'll be publishing something in the near future. That represents probably over half of the refining capacity of all HF-using refineries in the United States. The conclusions. The disaster potential is enormous. Once something happens, it's going to be too late. It's just going to be like Deepwater Horizon. Once something begins, there is no one ready to respond and deal with a disaster. The only assumption that people can use is the disaster won't happen. That's not a reasonable assumption. All the evidence of what has happened suggests that's not a reasonable assumption. People are not prepared to respond. We've talked to firefighters. We've talked to hospital workers. They are not ready to deal with a hydrofluoric acid incident at a refinery. Substitution is the only real solution to the problem, and the available alternatives need to be put in place, and the industry needs to take up substitution in a real, viable way and get to work on it immediately. We will have recommendations that will be forthcoming, what the union believes it should do, what the federal government should do, and what refiners should do in the near future, and it will essentially address all these conclusions.